You're listening to NALP Talk, and my name is Scott Love, your host and producer of the official podcast of the National Association for Law Placement. Thanks for joining us on our inaugural episode. Every other month, my goal in producing this show is to give you insights, information, and interviews that are relevant and helpful for you as it relates to what NALP is doing. In our inaugural episode, we're going to hear from both Danielle Taylor and Nakia Gray discussing the perspectives on 2023 Law Student Recruiting Report. Now, Danielle Taylor is a Director of Research and Chief Data Strategist at NALP, where she leads the association's research agenda. In her role at NALP, Danielle conducts research and analysis on the legal employment market, entry-level and lateral recruiting, attorney compensation, and diversity, equity, and inclusion within the legal profession. Nakia Gray, since October of 2022, is the Executive Director of NALP. Prior to joining NALP, Nakia was a managing partner of the Washington, D.C. office of Quarles & Brady and the Director of Legal Recruiting for the firm. Now, if you're someone that doesn't really enjoy digging into data, this show is going to help you. In our conversation with Danielle and Nakia, we're talking about the perspectives on 2023 Law Student Recruiting Report, which reflects how the market is readjusting from the post-pandemic hiring surge that seems to have left many law firms with talent levels that are misaligned with their longer-term client demands. What does this mean for you? Listen in on this conversation, and you'll get some great insights that will be very helpful for you. I hope you enjoy this first episode of the podcast. Thanks for listening. And now here's my conversation with Danielle and Nakia. Hey, this is Scott Love. We are with the first inaugural episode of NALP Talk, the official podcast of NALP. And I have with me Danielle Taylor and Nakia Gray. We're going to talk about the recruiting survey. But first, we're going to hear from Nakia about some of the upcoming events that all of our members should know about. Hello, Nakia. It's great to hear you on our first podcast.
Thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here. So we are really excited about a few upcoming things at NALP. The biggest, of course, is our annual education conference, which this year is in Boston. It's April 16th through 19th at the Hines Convention Center. And it's really shaping up to be the largest conference in NALP history. We have over 1,500 attendees registered so far, so wow. Really excited about it. And we're planning 90 concurrent sessions and two plenary sessions, including that we have Improv Boston kicking things off with a really high-energy plenary highlighting, you know, communication, collaboration, and active listening. And then we have Jeff Canada, who's a well-known American educator, social activist, and author, as well as the president of Harlem's Children's Zone. And he's going to talk about the recent SCOTUS decision, our Supreme Court decision on affirmative action, and its implication for the pipeline into law school. And so we're really privileged to have him at this conference. We're really excited about it.
That's great, Nakia. And registration is still open, is that correct?
Absolutely. We accept registrations even while the event is going on. So we hope that many more people are going to attend.
Fantastic. And for those of you listening, you can go to the show notes where you're hearing this particular podcast, and we'll put the link for registration on there as well, or you could go to the NALP website. Absolutely. And now we're going to talk about the recruiting survey. We've got Nakia and also Danielle Taylor talking about this survey. And Danielle, thanks for joining us on the podcast as well.
Great. Thanks, Scott.
And tell us about the survey. What was new about the survey this year?
Well, there was a lot that was new to the survey this year. Based on member feedback, we decided to overhaul the survey this year. And for the first time, we collected data on recruiting outcomes that happened via OCI separately from all other non-OCI recruiting. So looking at recruiting methods like direct application, referrals, law school, resume collects, for example. And additionally, we added some new items this year about the timing of when those offers are being made so that we can track how recruiting timelines are shifting going forward. We also added a new section to the survey regarding law firm scholarships, so that will allow us to know any changes that are happening there as well. And then finally, each year we continue to expand upon the number of items that we are collecting about 1L diversity fellows, and we added a new question about the acceptance rates to return next summer to firms as a 2L for those diversity fellows.
That's great, Danielle. And so for the past 2 years, NALP has collected data on the 1L diversity fellowships. What are you seeing there?
So we know from our data on 1L summer programs that diversity fellows have made up the majority of all 1L summer associates since we've been collecting that data. So for summer 2023, they made up 57% of all 1Ls. But we do have this new data this year on both those offer and those acceptance rates for diversity fellows to return as a 2L the following summer. And for those offer rates, they were right on par with what we saw for all 1L summer associates at 92% for the offer rate for diversity fellows. But what was interesting in the data this year is that the acceptance rates to return next summer were higher for those diversity fellows. Their overall acceptance rate was 74%. So it was a little bit higher compared to all 1L summer associates. Lastly, we have data on 2L summer programs that allows us to quantify the percentage of entry-level associate positions that are being filled by students who spent both their 1L and their 2L summers with their firm, and they were a diversity fellow with that firm during the 1L summer. Now, we only have 2 years of data there, but we're seeing that percentage increase. Last year was about 6% of entry-level associate positions being filled by these students who were 1L diversity fellows. This year, it grew to about 8%.
That's interesting. And so let me ask you then about some of the lawsuits that were challenging the 1L diversity fellowships being offered by a few different law firms. Nakia, how concerned do you think we should be if firms change their eligibility criteria for those programs or get rid of them altogether as a result of those lawsuits?
You know, Scott, I don't think this is something we should be really concerned about in terms of the diversity of the legal profession. You know, the key to understanding those programs is to understand that they are not pipeline programs. They are a tool that law firms are using to compete for top talent, right? In 2023, there were 875 1L students who received the diversity fellowships. That's out of 35,000 students, roughly, of that year, 11,000 of whom are students of color. So that's about 8% of the students of color in that class received the fellowship. So it's a small percentage, not insignificant, but it is a small percentage. But if we go underneath those numbers and we look more at, rather than just the number of those scholarships that were given out, if we look at who those fellowships went to, you know, we see this really interesting phenomenon where those fellowships are being primarily given to the top students at the top schools, right? So we're talking about the students who already have the best employment outcomes following graduation, who are most likely to become practicing attorneys, who are most likely to go into private practice if that's their choice to do so. So these fellowships, again, they're not pipeline programs, not increasing the number of diverse students who are going into law firms. They are tools that the law firms are using to recruit. So I'm really not concerned if law firms change the eligibility criteria or get rid of those programs overall. I'm far more concerned when we talk about diversity of the profession and what might happen there with the Supreme Court's decision on race-conscious admissions and how that might disrupt the pipeline. But I'm not concerned about those fellowships.
Great. Thank you, Nakia. Now, Danielle, in the report, you write that this also was one of the softest recruiting cycles NALP has seen since the Great Recession. What makes you say that exactly?
Well, I think we're seeing very acutely in this year's report some of the impacts of that hiring surge that happened in 2021 and into the early part of 2022 that I think Nakia can elaborate on later on. But that does appear to have resulted in many firms pulling back on their entry-level recruiting this year. And there are several key indicators that show that this was a more conservative recruiting season this cycle. First, overall offer volume dropped by 19%, and that's a pretty significant drop for 1 year. And we found that the majority of offices, well over 50%, said that they made fewer offers this most recent recruiting cycle compared to the previous one. Now, additionally, we found that the offer rate for those summer associate positions fell by 6 percentage points. That's also a pretty steep drop for just 1 year. It fell to just 46%, which is the lowest offer rate that we've observed since 2012 within the data. And typically, when we see those offer rates go down, we expect to see acceptance rates go up, right? Because there's fewer offers out there. So students have fewer offers to choose from. They're more likely to accept any particular offer. And that's exactly what happened this year. We saw that offer rate go down by 6 percentage points, and the acceptance rate went up by 6 percentage points. It went up to 47%. And that's the highest ever acceptance rate that we've seen in the data, and we've been tracking this now for more than 30 years. It's even higher than where it was during the Great Recession. So I think these are all indicators that this was a very soft recruiting season, and it was a very challenging recruiting season if you were a law student this year.
And so, Nikaya, let me ask you this, kind of taking what Danielle mentioned, if the numbers look so similar to what NALP was seeing during the recession, should we be worried that the legal industry is in another recession?
You know, Scott, I don't think so. I think what we're really seeing here is the market readjusting after we had that post-pandemic hiring surge that Danielle mentioned. And what happened during that time is that firms hired differently than maybe they would have otherwise, or with their traditional hiring metrics, which suggests that they hire. And now that left firms with talent levels out of alignment with ongoing client demands, right? So we're seeing that firms are over-leveraged. And although, you know, last year ended with a lot of reports of firms having record profits and so forth, what we saw when you look at a number of the industry reports out there that dig into that, what we saw is that firms, a lot of that was driven in the firms by increased client fees rather than leverage, and that utilization rates were really low in firms, meaning that they continue to carry excess capacity and were over leveraged. And so we think that firms are readjusting their hiring strategy as a result of that, and that we're not seeing necessarily, you know, that the legal industry is in some sort of dire straits, but rather it's just readjusting.
Sure, that makes sense. And Nikaya, you've also talked about how so much of recruiting is happening before OCI, and it sounds like the recruiting cycle has become very challenging, both for law schools and legal employers to manage. Last month, there were even reports of Stanford and Yale bumping up their OCI this year to June, in part to try to guide law firm recruitment through OCI rather than direct application. I know NALP used to have some timing guidelines in its principles and standards, which address things like how early recruiting should start. Is there any thought of bringing something like that back?
You know, Scott, there isn't. You know, one of the key pieces to understanding what's happening in the market right now is understanding U.S. antitrust law and how the interpretation of those laws and enforcement of those laws have really changed over the last decade. You know, as a trade association, which is made up of competitors, now really has to be particularly sensitive to not slip into that role of regulating the market. And any sort of policies that we could in theory establish related to this issue or in any way related to what employers can do when competing for talent could raise those antitrust issues. So we simply can't go in that direction. And I should say that not only do those antitrust laws prevent NALP itself from taking action, but it also applies to the law schools and legal employers out there. So I would caution folks listening to this to think that they might try amongst themselves to limit that pre-OCI recruiting, as that could raise the same antitrust issues.
Right, right. And Danielle, let me ask you this. Were there any other surprising aspects of the survey? What was it that surprised you the most with the data?
I think there's a couple of things that surprised me with the data this year. First of all, because we were able to break out that data separately for OCI versus non-OCI recruiting, one of the things that I think was interesting is that we saw that both offer rates and acceptance rates were higher for offers that were made outside of OCI versus those that were made via OCI. And I think that was something interesting that we'll want to see if that continues to be a trend moving forward. And then secondly, I think another area that was surprising this year was some of the timing data that was new this year. I think certainly there is this maybe misperception that all of the offers that are made outside of OCI are early offers. And certainly most of them are before that traditional August timeline. But the data showed this year that over a quarter of those offers made outside of OCI are made in August or even later. And I think that that's something that most people might not be aware of.
Right, right. And let me ask you this question. I know there's a lot of data on here. What is it, over 90 pages, something like that, start to finish, if you include the cover sheet? And so what would be some general recommendations you would give to people in terms of how should they read this? What advice would you give them? Where should they start? What recommendations would you give in terms of how someone who's a civilian, so to speak, they're not involved in data research every day like you are, how would they be able to absorb and assimilate and even apply some of this information?
So I think my recommendation would be to start at Nakaya's commentary and then my introduction. I think that will give readers a great overall picture of what was happening in the recruiting cycle this year. And then certainly I would recommend that people take a look at the table of contents and see the areas that are most important to them and most relevant to their work, where they can dive into that data further. So for example, if most of the recruiting that is happening at your firm is taking place outside of OCI, I would certainly recommend looking at some of those tables that break out that non-OCI recruiting separately from OCI recruiting. But it's also important to take a look at some of that overall data. So we have several tables that look at the overall picture. And then there are several additional tables that then break out that recruiting for OCI versus non-OCI. But of course, that commentary in the beginning, most important to understand exactly what's happening in the market.
That's great. Thank you. And Danielle, are there any upcoming NALP surveys that our listeners should be aware of?
Thank you, Scott. There are several that our listeners should be aware of. The first is our U.S. Survey of Legal Career Professionals. This is a survey that we conduct every 2 years to measure and benchmark our professional staff salaries and job responsibilities. So that survey will be launching within the next few weeks. And then we will have a Canadian version of that survey that will be launching later this summer. And then for our U.S. law school members, we're currently accepting data on their class of 2023 graduates and their employment outcomes, and we'll be collecting that data through Wednesday, April 10th.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. And Nakaya, I'm curious, are there any other recommendations that you would give to people in terms of their involvement with NALP as it relates to surveys, data, and other things in general?
Absolutely, Scott. So for one, please participate when we send these out. You know, our surveys are only as good as the participation we get from our members. And so we really encourage everybody to participate in the surveys, because it really does make them more robust and lets us dive into that data quite a bit more. You know, I do want to point out, I 100% agree with Danielle on how to approach this particular recruiting survey, as it's such a large survey. Definitely take a look at those commentaries in the beginning. But I'll also point out, I think it's really important for folks to dive into that data around how recruiting was done this year in terms of the, you know, how much was done during OCI, what were the other methods that firms and legal employers used during OCI during the summer to recruit candidates, as well as the timing. I just think that's very important for everybody to understand, because the market is shifting, right? It is inching its way towards a more free market system. And we're seeing this bifurcation of the way in which employers are recruiting, where they are recruiting early and targeting those that top talent in their early efforts. And then it seems like what we're seeing is that they're using OCI to top off or round out their classes. And so I think that that evolution that we're seeing is really important for legal employers to understand.
That's great.
Possible numbers.
That's great. That's very useful information.
And I also want to plug there as well, one of the new surveys that Danielle is actually developing right now is around the Canadian salary. So one of the things is we did recently have to remove from our Canadian database the salary information. So we are working on a new survey that will target that information similar to our associate salary guide. So be looking for that. We're hoping to launch that survey this fall.
That's great. So Nakaya, tell me more, why did NALP drop its timing guidelines?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question, Scott, because I think it's an important one for folks to understand. So that change was made back in 2018, in December of 2018 specifically, when NALP issued its Principles for Fair and Ethical Recruitment Process, which included a number of changes around in a number of areas from our prior principles and standards, including renaming it, right? But one of the big changes was moving from a fixed timing guidelines to of when recruiting should occur to a more general principles around ensuring that employers, when they are recruiting, are being sensitive to the fact that these are students, they are still in school, they have coursework and exams and so forth. And there was a number of reasons why we made that shift. And one of the things I think that people don't realize, in part because the pandemic kind of interrupted the recruiting cycle right after those changes were made, but pre-OCI recruiting was already happening at that time frame, right? We were already seeing it in the market, and we were receiving requests from our members to make those changes, to change the principles to more match what was happening in the market. So we were receiving those requests. And so that played into part of the decision at the time. But the changing ways in which antitrust law was being interpreted starting around that time and its enforcement really was a driving factor. And I think, you know, it's important to understand that when NELC first introduced its principles, they were intended to be simply guidelines, right? They were never intended to be the rules by which the industry operated. NELC is, of course, not a governing body or a trade association, right? But over time, what we saw was schools adopting the principles as the rules governing recruiting on their campuses, right? Which was one thing when a few schools did it, but as more schools did it, it started to raise concerns for us. And that activity, coupled with the changes in the way the laws were being interpreted and enforced, really made it an untenable situation and made it necessary for us to rethink the principles and their role in the market. And so we made the change. And now law schools are really setting the rules by which their students in which legal employers can recruit their students in a way that's more specific to their campuses and the needs of their students. So I think that's a good outcome.
That's great. Thanks for elaborating on that, Nakaya. Well, Nakaya, Danielle, thanks so much for being on our show and talking about the survey. And I'll see you both in Boston.
Great. Yeah, looking forward to seeing you there.